Masechet Baba Mesia Daf Mem Dalet, in which we will complete the third perek and begin the fourth. Mishnah HaChoshev Lishloach Yad BaPikadon. Bet Shammai Omerim Chayav, Bet Hillel Omerim Eno Chayav, Ad Sheishlach Bo Yad, Shenemar, Im Lo Shalach Yado, Im Lechet Re'ehu. So a shomer who thinks about, intends to misappropriate an item. That would mean, as she explains, that he tells witnesses, listen, I'm going over there and I'm going to use this item. I'm supposed to be a shomer for it, but I'm going to take a part of it or use it without permission. But he didn't actually do it yet, but he only intended to do it. Bet Shammai says, nevertheless, he is liable. Bet Hillel says he is not liable unless he actually misappropriates it. And Bet Hillel quotes the Pasuk, if he did not send his hand in the item of his friend. So here is the Pasuk he's talking about. Im lo shalach, he has to make a vow. This is talking about Shomer Chinam. If it's lost or stolen, so the Shomer makes a vow that he himself did not misappropriate it. And so he has to actually do it. The continuation is going to be Al Kol Debar Pesha Al Shavar Chama. We'll see these Pasukim, how they each side reads them. Okay, he tied the chavit and natal hemena revi'it and nishpera. Eno mishalem ela revi'it. Higbiyah and natal mihemena revi'it and nishpera mishalem deme kula. If the shomer tilts over the barrel in order to take just a revi'it of whatever it is in it, let's say wine, and it breaks, he has to pay for the revi'it because that's what he was intending to steal, but he was not intending to steal any of the rest of it, and he didn't pick up the rest of it, he just tilted it. So he has to pay only what he intended to steal, which is the revi'it, and the rest he didn't move. So this broke by itself. So that would be the same as if he didn't do anything and it broke by itself. He is not responsible. However, if he lifted the entire barrel in order to steal the revi'it of it, and it broke, he has to pay because he moved the entire thing, and he moved it for his own sake, for his own benefit, not for the protection of the barrel if it was in a dangerous place. He moved it for his own sake, which was not allowed, fell out of his hands or broke on its own, doesn't matter. He has to pay for the whole thing because he was not allowed to move it out of its place. That is the Mishnah. Menah Nemile. We asked, what's the source for Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai? De Tanu Rabbanan. Al Kol Debar Pesha Bet Shammai Menemile Men Shalchev Agam Machshava Kema'aseh. Since the Pasuk, this is the Pasuk 8, says, for any matter of guilt. So what does this add? Any matter of guilt? Bet Shammai says that comes to include thought like action. Even declaring your intention that I'm going to take from this, even before you do it, you're already guilty. Bet Hillel says, no, one is not liable unless he actually takes from it. Bet Hillel omrim eno chayav ad sheishlach bo yad shenemar, im lo shalach yado melechet re'ehu, says until you actually misappropriate it. Amru lahem bet Shammai lebet Hillel, ha'lo kevar ne'emar al kol devar pesha. Amru lahem bet Hillel lebet Shammai, ha'lo kevar ne'emar im lo shalach yado melechet re'ehu. The Braita continues, and each one challenges the other from the pasuk that they use. So bet Shammai asks bet Hillel, doesn't it say on any matter? Doesn't that include something? Doesn't that include just thought? And bet Hillel counters, but doesn't the pasuk say if he did not, he has to swear that he did not actually send his hand and misappropriate? Means he has to actually do it in order to be liable. So now we ask only in one direction. What is Bet Hillel going to do with those extra words on any matter of guilt? So he acknowledges that these are extra words that comes to include something, but Bet Hillel would say, this does not include just thinking about taking it. Rather, it includes if the shomer tells his servant or his agent, can you go and take that thing? He doesn't do it himself, he tells someone else to. Is he guilty? And the answer is yes, because it says, al kol devar pesha. In general, we say, en shalech lidvar avera. There's no such thing as an agent for a sin, that the agent who does it is liable, not the sender. But there are some exceptions, and this is one of the exceptions, where the sender, who is the shomer, is liable. You're supposed to be watching it, safeguarding it. Instead, you instructed someone to go and steal it on his for, and he's going to take it, or you, it gives it to you, whatever, it doesn't matter. So therefore, he is liable, and that's what Bet Hillel does with that pasuk. But the Gemara does not explain what Bet Shammai does with the other pasuk. Hitate chavit amada ba'alo shanu ela nishpera aval echmitza meshamet kola amay ta'ama gire dide huda hanula. If the shomer intended to take only a revi'it, and he just tilted the barrel but did not pick it up, and the whole thing broke, he has to only pay for the revi'it. That's what the Mishnah said. Rabba said he's only free from paying for the entire barrel when he did, when it broke. But let's say it all fermented, all went bad, the wine turned into vinegar. Then he has to pay for the whole thing. Why? Because literally his actions, but it means his arrows, but it means his actions are what caused it to go bad. When it's nice and sealed up, it'll stay good. The shomer opened up the top in order to take some of it, but by opening up the top, he exposed it, and now the whole thing went bad because of his actions. So he directly caused the whole thing to ferment, and therefore he has to pay for the entire thing. Unlike where he just tips it over. So he didn't steal it yet. He left it in place, just tipping over so that whatever's on top will come out. But he didn't do anything to the bottom, and so it's not his fault or problem that it broke. So that's why in that case he does not have to pay for the rest of it. But if it went bad, fermented, then he does. If the shomer lifted the entire thing and poured to pour out some part of it, and then it broke, he is liable for the whole thing. Shmuel says when the Mishnah says he picked it up and took it doesn't mean literally that he had to take it, even if he picked it up in order to take, even if he didn't take. If he picks it up with intention that I'm not picking it up in order to save it from, to be in a safe place, I'm picking it up in order to take it, that's already a misappropriation, and then it broke. So he is liable. So now, this opinion of Shmuel, can we relate it to the machloket we had earlier, that in order to be liable for misappropriation, you're liable even if you did not cause a loss in the value of the item. And it seems that Shmuel would agree to that, because here, he just picked it up. He didn't yet pour anything out, so he didn't cause it any loss, and yet he's liable. Amri la shane hachad nichaled deheve hachavit kula basis leharebi'it. And we say, no, not necessarily. This case is different, because the shomer wants the entire chavit to be a base for the revi'it that he's going to steal. In other words, he has it here, this barrel. He's going to move it somewhere else, maybe, down the block. And that he's going to pour it out where he's going to have it. Now, he prefers for it to be in the barrel while he takes it, because it will stay good in the barrel with the rest of the wine there. And therefore, when he's stealing it, he actually is benefiting and intending to have the entire thing with him. So if it breaks in the middle, he is liable for the whole thing for that reason. It's not that he performs shlichut yad just yet. He may very well agree that in general, shlichut yad he's not liable to shlichut and does not take responsibility for a thing until he actually takes something out of it. But in this case, he is benefiting from the storage capacity and preservation capacity of the barrel as he's transporting it. And so he is using the whole thing, and therefore is liable to stealing the whole thing even before he pours it out. Rav Asher asked, what about in the case of a coin, if someone's intends to steal just one coin from a purse, but he picks up the entire purse in order to steal one dinar. Would that be the same as the case of the barrel or not? Right, if it got lost at that point or broke, would he be liable to the whole thing? Would you say they're different? And wine doesn't stay good unless it's with all the rest of the wine in the barrel, and so therefore he benefits from moving the wine. He intends for everything to come along, but a coin is safeguarded. A coin is not going to go bad if it's not with the rest of the coins. And so in that case, when he picks up the purse, he really doesn't care about the purse itself or the rest of the coins in it. He really only cares about the coin, and therefore he should not be liable. Or do we say the safeguarding of an entire purse is better than the safeguarding of one dinar? If you have, you know, one coin, it's easy to lose. Whereas if you carry it together with the whole purse, and here he's going to carry it down the block to somewhere else and then take one coin, he'd prefer to carry it together in the purse, where it's easier to safeguard. Teko, we leave that question open. Hazran alach hamafkid chazakim uberuchim, for completing the third pedik. And now we move on to the fourth pedik. Hazahav koneh hakesef, hakesef eno koneh hazahav. Okay, a major principle in this Mishnah to understand it is that transactions work in times of the Mishnah differently than the way we might expect nowadays. Nowadays, we think if you pay for something, then you bought it. The payment is what effectuates the transaction. But in the Mishnah law, it's actually the opposite. Paying for something does not effectuate the transaction, and you can go back on it and say, no, I changed my mind. Whereas what effectuates the transaction is the transfer of the goods, of the commodity. So if I'm buying some fruit, right? So now if I pull the fruit or pick it up, then that's it. The transaction is completed even before I pay. And if I just pay and didn't yet transfer the fruit, then I didn't get the fruit. That's not mine. Okay, so it's the transfer of the commodity, not the transfer of the money, that effectuates the actual sale and transfer of ownership rights. Good. So that's very clear if it's talking about fruit and coins. Coins is the currency, fruit is the commodity. But now we're talking about exchanging currencies. When you exchange a currency, so then what is that? Which one is the currency and which one is the commodity? If we're talking about fruit and fruit, we're changing apples for oranges, that's barter. And then fine, both of them are commodities. So either one that you pull will effectuate the change. But we're talking about two currencies, so we're going to talk about a relative value, one relative to the other. So here we go. Gold coins can purchase silver coins, but silver coins do not purchase gold coins. In other words, silver coins are considered a currency when compared to gold. Silver coins are most commonly used, and gold is less common, commonly used as a currency. Gold is because it's actually so valuable, so it's like taking out a $1,000 bill, which is, you know, harder to trade with. So therefore, the silver, that's the currency. So if I give you gold, then that's it. You acquire the gold, because the gold here is like the fruit. That's the commodity. And so once I give you the gold, then the transaction is effectuated, and I own that silver that you are going to give me. Even if you didn't give it to me yet, I already own it. I just have to go and collect it. Whereas the other way around, if you pay me some silver coins to buy gold, but I didn't give you the gold yet, you just gave me money. The transaction is not completed, and either party can renege on the deal. Next case, hanechoshet koneh et hakesef, hakesef eno koneh et hanechoshet. You notice that the kesef is still the currency, even though copper is worth less, because silver is the most common type of coin. That's the one that's used in buying and selling most often. So regarding copper, although copper coins also are used, but they're not as valuable, they're not as as exchangeable, they're not used as often. And so the same thing, if I give you some copper coins, then that's like the fruit, that's the commodity, and the trade is effectuated, and you owe me, you have to give me the coins, whereas the silver coins, whereas if you give me the silver coins, that does not effectuate the transaction. Ma'ot ha-ra'ot konot et ha-yafot, v'yafot enan konot et ha-ra'ot. If even if you have coins of all the same type, but some of them are flawed coins, people would rub off the sides of the coin to take a little bit of that of the silver off of them, or it's rubbed out, and so it's not such a great coin. So a flawed coin compared to a good coin, well, then the flawed coin is going to be the commodity. And so therefore, if you give me some flawed coins, then that already effectuates the transaction, and you have to pay with the good coins. Whereas if you give me some good coins, then that you paid for it, but that's the currency, and we can renege on the deal before I give you the bad coins. Similarly, Asimon kone et ha-matbea. Matbea no kone et Asimon. Asimon, we know from the olden days in Israel, when you have to put the coin in the telephone, and the public telephone with the hole in it. Okay, but Asimon actually comes from ancient Greek, which means an unminted coin. You have just a round circle of metal before it's stamped. So that's less of a currency than a minted coin. So therefore, if I give you an Asimon, so then that effectuates the transaction. That is the commodity compared to a minted coin, which is the currency. And giving a minted coin does not effectuate the transaction, and does not mean that the ownership of the Asimon has transferred. Metaltalin konta matbea, matbea no koneta metaltalin. We leave the most obvious case for last. It would have been nice to have this case first, because it's the basic principle. Movable items, if I'm buying a chair from you, once I move the chair, then it's mine, and then my coins are already become yours, even though I didn't give it to you yet. The sale is final. Whereas if I give you money but didn't yet pull the chair, then the sale is not final. Giving over the money does not effectuate the transfer of ownership to the chair. Zeh kelal. Kol metaltim konin zeh et zeh. Kesad. Mashach manu perot velo natan lo ma'ot. Eno yachol lachazor bo. Natan lo ma'ot velo mashach manu perot. Yachol lachazor bo. The rule is that exchange of movable property makes something, it works to acquire the other thing, whatever it is. And that would be true of barter, of a chair for a couch. So once one pulls one, the other gets the other. And here's the example that we've been talking about above. If the last thing over here about metaltalin, if I pull your fruit to buy it and I didn't yet pay, I cannot change my mind, because that's it. I pulled the fruit. You can't change your mind. Whereas if I gave you money, but I didn't yet pull on the fruit, then I could say, forget it, I changed my mind. Aval ameru, mi shepara me'anshe dora mabul, mi dora palagahu, atid li para mi mi she'eno omed b'dibora. However, even though on a technical level, according to the letter of the law, even if you paid me, I could renege on the deal and I say, forget it. However, the rabbis give a curse on anyone who reneges on the deal after the money was transferred. And the curse is Hashem, who punished the generation of the flood and the generation of the Tower of Babel, who he will punish someone who doesn't stand up to his word. All right, your word should be like gold. Actually, it has to be better than gold. It should be like pulling the commodity. And once you say, I agreed to the price and we're going to sell it, then you should stand by your word and don't take the money and then say, oh, you know what, forget it. Oh, you didn't pull the item yet, so it's not yours. All right, you know what, I don't want to sell it anymore. That's not proper to do. Rabbi Shimon omer, kol shekesef biyado, yado al ha'alyona. Rabbi Shimon just disagrees on one point, that if you give me money to buy something, then I can renege on the deal. Whoever has the money in their hand, they have the advantage. So because I have the money, I can renege and say, you know what, forget it, I don't want to sell it to you. But if you once you gave me the money, you cannot renege on the deal anymore, because you have the lower hand because you don't have the money there with you. Whereas according to Tanakama, either party can renege on the deal and say, you know, even though I paid you, but I don't want the item. Give me the money back. I'm not letting you have, I'm not taking the item. I want to renege on the deal. So Tanakama says either party can renege. Rabbi Shimon says only the one who's holding the money. Gemara. Matni lerbi lerbi Shimon bere. Hazahav koneta kesef. Amar lo rabbi shanita lanu bialdutecha kesef koneta zahav. Vetachzor vetishne lanu beziknutecha hazahav koneta kesef. In fact, there are two versions of this Mishnah, and in the Talmud Yerushalmi has the opposite version. Not what we have here, hazahav koneta kesef, but the other way around, hakesef koneta zahav. And now we learn that, in fact, there were two versions, two editions of the Mishnah. And so when Rabbi, that's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the composer of the Mishnah, taught his son Rabbi Shimon, he taught him the Mishnah as we have, as like we just read, Hazahav koneh kesef, that the kesef, the silver, is the currency. So the son said, Rabbi, right, my teacher is also his father, but also his teacher. When you were young, you taught us a different version, that the other way around, that kesef can acquire zahav, meaning the gold is the currency. And now you're changing your mind, and when you're old, and you're teaching us the other way around, right? What's going on? Bialdute my savar, biziknute my savar. So Gemara says, what was the reasoning behind what he said when he was young, and what's the reasoning of what he said now when he's older? Bialdute savar dahava de chashiv have tiba. When he was young, he thought that since gold is worth more, it's more valuable, so therefore that should be the currency. The currency should be the more valuable item, right? Generally, if you have like fruit and coins, the fruit is less valuable per pound than the coins. That's why, I mean, usually currency is something small and very valuable so that you can carry it around. So it would make sense that gold would be currency compared to silver. It's the fruit or the commodity, in this case, the silver, that would purchase the currency, meaning the gold. However, biziknute savar, kaspa de harif have tiba dahaba de la harif have pera vekanile pera le tiba. Then he realized a different reasoning, that silver is harif, it circulates more. People use it more, merchants use it more, because it's easy, it's the right amount. You know, it's like a $20 bill. It's good, it's very easy to use, to buy things. Therefore that should be the currency, whereas gold, which doesn't circulate so much, it's like $1,000 bill, so therefore that should be the commodity. And the commodity, well, if I give you gold, then you get the currency and not the other way around. So Ravashe says what he said in his youth actually makes more sense from the continuation of the Mishnah itself. Because in the continuation of the Mishnah, it says that copper acquires silver, meaning silver is the currency. Now, I amart bishlama kaspa legabe dahava pera have haynu dekata neha nechoshit konat hakesef daf al pide legabe dahava pera havya legabe nechoshit tiba have. If you say that silver is considered a commodity when compared to gold, in other words, the other version of the Mishnah, not the one that we have, then it makes sense that it has to follow up with the fact that regarding copper, it's different, because copper can acquire silver, so meaning that the silver is the currency in this case, right? So you have to say that, because the point is that they're contrasting. Even though compared to gold, silver is a commodity, when compared to copper, it's a currency. So that reading makes sense, that the Mishnah needed to talk about copper to contrast the relationship of silver to gold with the relationship with that of silver to copper. Ela iamat kaspad legabe dahavati ba'ahave, hashta legabe dahavate chashib mine amati ba'ahave, legabe nechosh idu chashib ihu charif mi ba'ya. But if you have the reading as is, what that would be said in his old age, then it doesn't make sense, because if you say that silver in relation to gold is a currency, so then all the more so if compared to gold, where gold is more expensive than silver, and yet silver is still the currency, all the more so compared to copper, where silver is both more valuable than copper, and it also circulates more easily than copper. So for sure, the silver is going to be the currency. In other words, the version of the Mishnah that Rabbi said when he was young makes more sense in the flow of the Mishnah. So it makes sense that the original Mishnah said what he said, what said the Rabbi's version when he was young, because there it has to contrast silver compared to gold as a commodity, but silver compared to copper as a currency. But in the current version that Rabbi said when he was in his old age, the line about copper, I don't need it, right? It's obvious that copper, that silver, if silver is a currency regarding gold, all the more so silver is also a currency regarding copper. I don't need that line. So is that a good proof that the correct version is what Rabbi said when he was younger? And the answer is no. Even according to the current version of the Mishnah, I need this line. Is tirich, I need that line of copper. Sakada techamina. Hane pirite batra de sege inu charife tefe mi kaspa. Ema tivahave. Kamashmalan kevandi ika duchta de lasa gibe perahave. I might have thought that these perutot, these very small coins made out of copper, in a place where they are in currency, they circulate even more than silver. So they're really more like currency than silver is. So I might have thought that copper is currency compared to silver. And therefore, the Mishnah has to teach us not so. Even though that's true in some places, there are also other places where copper does not circulate. It's too cheap and people don't like it and they don't use it. And therefore, copper is, in fact, a commodity compared to silver. So we do need to teach me that in both cases, silver is the currency, both compared to gold and compared to copper. Now, Rabbi Chiya also thinks that gold is the currency. In other words, Rabbi's old opinion. Derav ozif dinare mi batere de Rabbi Chiya. Lesof iyakur dinare. Atale kame de Rabbi Chiya. Amarle zil shelim la tabin ut kilin. Iyamat bishlamad havati bahave shapir. Ela iyamat perahave havale se'a be'se'a ve'asur. Okay, we're going to try to prove from the following story that Rabbi Chiya held that gold is a currency compared to silver. Because there's a story that Rav, the great Amora, one time borrowed gold dinarim from the daughter of Rabbi Chiya. The value of gold dinarim went up in price, and so Rav wasn't sure what to do. Should he, let's say he borrowed 10 gold coins, should he give back the same 10 gold coins, not the same coins, he used them. Should he give back also 10 gold coins, or because they went up in value, maybe that will be like paying interest on it, and it wouldn't be allowed. So he came to Rabbi Chiya, the father of this woman who lent him the gold coins in the first place. And Rabbi Chiya ruled, yes, Rav, you should go pay my daughter 10 gold coins, right, that are good, unflawed, weighed out, good coins, and don't worry about it. That's the end of the story. Now we analyze. If you think that gold is currency, that's fine. When it comes to currency, currency is the standard. So if you borrowed $1,000, you can pay back $1,000. Even if that $1,000 has more buying power or less buying power, as inflation, doesn't matter, right? You can always, that's the definition of a permitted loan, is you take and you pay back the same amount. So then this story would make sense. However, if you think that gold is a commodity, well, then that would be the same as lending someone a measurement of wheat and giving back the same measurement of wheat, and that's prohibited because the value of wheat is always going to go up and down. And if I give you a volume of wheat and then the price goes up and you give me back a volume of wheat, but now you're paying me back more than I give you. And the rabbi said that that's prohibited. because of interest. And so if gold is the same as a commodity, then the ruling would have been, well, you have to see what the value of the gold that you got off was and go back only the value of the gold, not often that would be less than 10. But he didn't say that. He said, give back the 10. So you see that Rabbi Chiya felt that gold coins are a currency. So is this a good proof? We say, no, not necessarily. Rav dinare havule. V'chavan da havule dinare nasa ke omer la halveni ad she'evo b'ni o ad she'emsa mafteyach. Rav actually had gold coins that somewhere in storage, but he didn't have access to them. Now, because he had gold coins, it's the same as a case of someone who says, lend me whatever, wheat or any item until my son comes or until I find the key. I have that very item. So this ruling of a se'ah be'se'ah that's prohibited, that's only if you don't have that item. But if you do have that item, I have wheat in my storage house. I just lost the key. Can you give me some wheat, lend me some wheat until I find it, then I'll give it back to you, grab back to you what I already have there. So then since I already have it, the price fluctuation doesn't matter to me. So I can give you back the same thing. It's basically like you give me this, I'm giving you that. So it's just in the storehouse. It's already there, right? That's yours. So I'm not giving you back I'm not making money or losing money on the deal. It's all the same. I'm just using this and you're going to use that instead. So Rav had gold coins. And so it could be that gold coins are a commodity. And nevertheless, it was permitted because Rav had gold coins, just he wasn't that weren't accessible to him. Amadava han haytana sabad dahavati bahave detanya peruta shamru echad mishemona b'israel italki lamay nafka min hadikudush eisha isar echad meesrim varba b'dinar shel kesef lamay nafka mina mikachu mimkar dinar shel kesef echad meesrim vechamisha b'dinar shel zahav lamay nafka mina lepidyon haben. Rava says the Tana of the following Braita agrees that gold is a currency. Gold is a currency. It's against our version of the Mishnah. Again, this is like Rabbi's original version when he was young. The Braita reads that peruta, when we speak about a peruta, it's 1/8 of an Italian isad or Roman isad. And why now the Gemara interrupts? You see, that's in Hebrew. The Gemara interrupts in Aramaic. Why do we need to know that? For kiddushin, in order to effectuate kiddushin, has to be at least a peruta. So what's the value of peruta? It's got to be at least 1/8 of an Italian isad. Italian isad is a bigger denomination, is more stable, so you got to make sure that the peruta, whatever you're using, if your local peruta goes down in price less than that, then that peruta is actually worth less than the peruta, and the kiddushin is not valid. And so an isad is 1/24 of a silver coin. Why do we need to know that? For buying and selling. If something is valued at a certain number of isad, so then you have to know that, well, how much is it compared to dinar, so that you're so that you're translating the price fairly. Now, dinar shel kesef, echad me'esrim v'chamisha b'dinar shel zahav. Why do I need to know? L'may nafka mina l'pidyon haben. Why do I need to know that a silver coin is 1/25 of a golden coin? You need to know it for pidyon haben, where you have to give five sela, which are worth 20 silver dinar. So if you're going to want to give 20 silver dinar, you have to know how much that is worth precisely. And so we're going to use a higher value of gold, which is a gold standard, compared to the silver, in order to tell you that, listen, the silver might go up and down, but here, make sure it's considered 20 silver dinar compared to gold, when gold is 25 silver coins. Now, if you say that gold is currency, then this baraita makes sense, that you're going to give a value of something that changes with something that's fixed. The gold, the value of gold is fixed. Whatever you consider the currency is fixed. The commodity changes in price, right? We don't do the other way around. You don't say, this apples are worth a fixed amount. Oh, dollars went up and down compared to an apple. No, you don't say that. You say a dollar is a dollar. Apples went up in value or down in value. So this baraita, you see, considers gold to be the standard, the currency, and is telling you about the silver, which is compared to it a commodity. So you see that the baraita reads well, with that assumption. Ela yamar peraha ve mishayr tana bemidi de okir ve zil zimnin de mehader le kahana ve zimnin de mosif le yu le kahana ela shemaminati bahave shemamina. But if you say that gold is a commodity, does it make sense that the tana would compare the silver that you have to give to the Kohen with gold that goes with something that goes up and down, as commodities go up and down? If you think that silver is the main currency, if you do that, it makes no sense, because sometimes the Kohen, you'll overpay the Kohen and he has to give you back money. Sometimes you'll have to add money to give to the Kohen, because, right, if you say that we're comparing a fixed value to something that changes, so then the gold changes, so then if it goes down in value, oh, now you have to give me more. Oh, it just went up in value. Okay, give me back some money. That doesn't make any sense. Rather, it makes much more sense that the Tana is considering gold to be the currency. That's the standard. And it's telling you how much silver is there is so that you can fix the price in a way that will not change. Tenan hatam. We have a Mishnah in Masechet Maaser Sheni. Bet Shammai omrim lo yaase adam selaim dinare zahav. Ubet Hillel matirin. Bet Shammai says, if someone has Maaser Sheni fruit, they separated a tenth and they have to bring it to Jerusalem and eat it there. But they live far away, so they can't carry all that fruit. So they redeem the fruit onto a coin. So let's say they redeemed it onto a silver coin. Very good. And now they want to change it again and move, desacralize the silver coin and put it onto a gold coin. Bet Shammai says you're not allowed to do that. Bet Hillel, however, says it's okay. You can transfer from the silver coin to the golden coin. Now we'll see two interpretations of this machloket. Rabbi Yochanan v'Resh Lakish. Chad amar machloket b'slaim al dinarin de Bet Shammai sabre kaspati bavida hava pera. So one of these two will figure out who says which, but one of them says that the machloket is regarding moving the holiness from silver to gold. Bet Shammai thinks that silver is a currency compared to gold, and gold is the commodity, and you cannot take sacred currency and desacralize it onto commodity. I mean, you could do it in Jerusalem when you actually buy the fruit, right? But you can't redeem from currency to commodity, and therefore, Bet Shammai says you cannot go from silver to gold. However, Bet Hillel thinks that silver is a commodity compared to gold, which is a currency, and therefore, you can always take commodity and move it to currency, and therefore you can move the holiness from the silver to the gold. However, everyone agrees that perot al dinarin, if you have actual fruit, meaning actual commodity, then compared to actual fruit, golden coins are considered a currency in comparison with them. So everybody would agree that you can use golden coins in the first place. You just, once they're silver, Bet Shammai thinks that silver is a higher level of currency, so you can't move from silver to gold, but you can always move from actual fruit to gold, according to Bet Shammai. My tama midi dehava kesef lebet hilel. Kesef lebet hilel af agav dechaspa legabe dehava perahave, legabe perati vahave, zahav name lebet shamai, af agav dehava legabe chaspa perahave, legabe perati vahave. What's the reason that Bet Shammai permits you to use gold to redeem fruit itself, even though gold, you cannot transfer from silver to gold? Well, the reasoning is similar to what Bet Hillel thinks internally regarding silver, right? For Bet Hillel, silver, even though when compared to gold, the silver is a commodity, but in comparison to actual fruit, silver is a currency. So the same thing is true for gold, according to Bet Shammai. Even though gold compared to silver is a commodity, but gold compared to actual fruit is a currency. And therefore, Bet Shammai agrees that even though you can't go from silver to gold, because that would be less of a currency, nevertheless, he agrees that you can go from fruit to gold, because gold still is a currency compared to fruit. That's all one opinion between Resh Lakish and Biochanan. But the other opinion, they say that Bet Shammai would disagree and say, in both cases, not only can you not change silver to gold, you cannot even redeem fruit to gold. They think that gold is simply not a currency, not at all, not in comparison to silver, and not even in comparison to fruit. You can never redeem fruit for gold. You have to go only use silver. Now, according to this last opinion, that the machlok between Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel applies in all cases, that you cannot even take produce and redeem it for golden coins, and certainly not silver for golden coins. So then, why does it bother in the Mishnah to say that Bet Shammai disagrees with Bet Hillel regarding silver coins to redeem to golden coins? Why not just talk about fruit and say, you can't even take fruit and use golden coins? And all the more so, I would know that according to Bet Shammai, if I cannot redeem fruit with golden coins, and certainly I cannot move the Kedusha from silver to golden coins. And the answer is, E iflug beperot al dinarin hav amina, hanem mila beperot al dinarin, ava beslim al dinarin modula hen bet hilel, le bet shamay de dahava lega bechaspa perahave, vela mechalelinan kamashmalan. If the Mishnah told us only that, according to Bet Shammai, you cannot take fruit and redeem it for golden coins, I would have thought that the machloket is only in that case. Bet Shammai says you cannot take fruit for golden coins, and Bet Hillel says you can take fruit and redeem it for golden coins. However, regarding silver coins, I might have thought that Bet Hillel would agree with Bet Shammai that gold, in comparison to silver, is a commodity, and I cannot transfer silver to gold. That's why the Mishnah had to teach us the Chidush for Bet Hillel. Bet Hillel says, not only can you redeem produce itself for golden coins, you can even transfer from silver to gold, because he thinks that compared to silver, gold is a currency and therefore is permitted. Baruch Adonai Leolam, Amen v'Amen.